From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Macon Stuff, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where Dice Game Devs talk gaming and game development. I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games.
In this episode, it's a post-mortem with Mark Hamilton and me. We did an LX Jamathon, and we're here to talk about it. So if everyone is ready, let's start. I think that performance speaks for itself.
I guess A plus then.
Yeah, no, I can stop. I'm satisfied. We don't have to do this anymore.
Right. It's not going to stop, though. Welcome, Mark Hamilton, to the show.
Thanks.
And again, we have two Marks.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut you off.
I'm just trying to keep quiet, just not confuse listeners.
Yeah, fair enough. Would you like to talk about yourself a little bit?
Yeah, sure. My name is Mark Hamilton. I am an instructional media developer and studio manager. Work at the University of Iowa, and I basically work with faculty members to try to help them make engaging media that is pedagogically effective, that's effective for learning, instead of just really dull, here's a PowerPoint slide as I talk through this slowly. So lots of designing studio spaces, post-production, and then coaching them on accessibility as well as even their performance, so directing and stuff.
Cool. And so you and Ellen did a Jamathon.
We did, yeah.
So this is a thing that you've talked to us about for a long time.
Yes.
That it was coming, but I don't think I ever got a real solid handle on what it is. So I'm actually really, really excited to hear about it.
Yeah, well, I feel like it took us a while to get a handle on what it would be. But to kind of back the story up a little bit more, so Mark Hamilton, because there are two Marks. We might have to say it a couple times throughout the rest of the episode. But we are both part of an instructional design Discord community. And we've mentioned this a lot on the show because sometimes whenever I get on a spiel, whenever I decide to get on a soapbox, it's usually about the similarities between gameplay and the way learning experiences should be organized. Mm-hmm. So that's, my background is in learning experience design. And Mark's background is in instructional media design. And so we both ended up on the same server. And for some reason, I think it was, there was a Discord user named Kim who initially was asking the server, hey, is there anything out here like a game jam or a hackathon for learning experience designers? And a bunch of people of various levels of experience on the server said, no, but there should be. So we started, I think Kim started a group chat with all these folks. And after a period of a few months where there was limited progress, everyone, including me and Mark, got too busy to work on it. But Mark and I were the ones who decided we were going to keep working on it despite the fact we were still too busy. Yeah. So I think, we've been working on it for an embarrassingly long time, I feel like. But I don't know. When did we start talking about this thing?
I think that user, Kim, I think she showed up in March of 2021. So it's been over a year.
Wow.
It was originally that whole group and made very little progress because we're like, oh, we'll meet once a week, and meeting once a week for an hour is not enough time to actually accomplish much.
Yeah.
To put together an event like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole house move. I moved houses in the middle of us working. That's the amount of time that has passed. So that's, I've done a lot of, well, I wouldn't say a lot. There's probably people out there who've done way more game jams than I have, but I've done quite a few, and they're really, really fun, and I think they're really valuable experiences for designers of any sort to participate in, right? Mm-hmm. And you guys know this because you've also been in lots of game jams.
Right.
It's helpful to get an idea out really fast and to work together with other people to bring it to life really quickly. And I think it hones your design skills and your development process and your production and your communication, above all, your teamwork. So on and so forth. And these are all things that learning experience designers, learning experience designers could really benefit from as well. So we just kind of started by researching stuff and eventually ended up a couple weeks ago hosting our event with Finally.
Finally. It only took like a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember we were so ambitious at the very beginning, and so was everyone else. And we're like, yeah, oh, we can put this together. Let's try 6 weeks from now. Put
this together. Oh.
Laughable in retrospect.
Yeah, that's so
like,
tough.
Oh, we got like 8 people working on this at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, too many, like, kind of too many cooks scenario a little bit.
Yeah,
it's like we kind of spun our wheels for a few weeks and didn't even come to consensus on what it should be. When we had the full
group. Yeah, yeah, because at first it was supposed to be like straight up a hackathon, and then we were kind of like debating about the difference. I remember in the group chats one of the times debating about the difference between a hackathon and a jam and which would be more appropriate, and then we're like, why not both? And we just kind of smashed them together. We're trying to figure out what to call it.
Well, there, I think in really early brainstorming as well, there were some folks who were like, wanted to make it an instructional experience for participants as well, like, here are specific lessons and takeaways and objectives that we're going to have you go for as a participant.
Right.
And we're going to validate that you get these takeaways before the end of the experience, which is not really what we were thinking of with a hackathon or a jam experience. And so there were really like 3 different ideas for what the experience would be bouncing around. And so I think that because of how the group initially came together, there really wasn't like a clear product owner or like director kind of person.
Okay.
And so that's something that, you know, when we whittled down the group to just the two of us, neither one of us has really like very specific roles. Like, we do things that our skill set leans towards. Like I wrote the fake Wikipedia article. You did the fake podcast episode, which was amazing. We'll get to that later. But, you know, like, we didn't have one of us being like the decision maker. We were when it was just the two of us, we were in sync enough as to what we thought it could be that we just made lots of those decisions together.
Okay. And so, like, I mean, you were describing the way that the workflow changed. Like, initially you were trying to meet once a week for an hour, and you realized that wasn't nearly enough time you needed. And but when it was just you two working on it, like, how many hours did you work on it over a week?
Oh boy. I feel like I'm gonna say a number and it's gonna be like way lower than Mark's number. It's gonna make me feel really embarrassed. I actually logged all my time though.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, yeah. You go first.
Okay. Let me pull up.
Well, while Ellen's looking that up, I found it really interesting that you said that people wanted to design it as a learning experience for participants.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that is just from the instinct of the learning experience designer of like, I'm making a thing, just use all, you know, or was it really like, let's do a jam. Oh, wouldn't it be neat if we also did this? You know what I mean? Was it an added idea, or was it like the default that some participants went to or some planners went to that you had to sort of talk them out of?
We didn't talk them out of it, right? We just didn't have them. No.
We just didn't have, and we didn't have enough time. Like, I was one of the people to kind of push for something like that early on, because I was trying to figure out, how do I add value to this? And especially with, like, the person that first came in and asked about it wasn't even an instructional designer yet. They were, like, about to graduate.
Yeah, okay.
And so we were thinking, when we're going to start marketing and thinking about who we want to draw in, is this really going to be geared towards, you know, brand new instructional designers that are like people that are really bored at their job and just want something creative to do. And if it's newer folks, like, a lot of them are just chock full of questions. So it'd be really adding a lot of value for them if we also had it be doing double duty and be like, right, hey, you're going to walk away with these like understandings and ideas by the end of the jamathon.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be something we can talk about towards the end of today's episode, when we're talking about what we want to do differently next time, if we want to do one again. I do have an hour count. I don't know if it's accurate though.
Yeah.
It says, so my toggle tracker says I spent 70 hours on it, which seems low.
That's, I mean, considering how long you've talked about it, that does seem low.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's not, like, maybe I didn't start tracking it until recently. Because it seems low, even though, like, it's spread out over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were some, you know, some weeks where we just, like, met for an hour and then we did, like, an hour or two of work outside of our meetings and then came back. But I think it was, that seems low to me. But on the other hand, like, a lot of the higher effort stuff you were in charge of, like, you built the website and things. I guess I doodled an Oskaloose. You're gonna ask what an Oskaloose is. We'll explain.
Wow, like, I don't know what an Oskaloose is.
Yeah, geez.
I don't know what an Oskaloose is. I don't know if that was clear.
There's no way you would know because we made it up.
Oh.
You did do the doodling of the Oskaloose and a lot of, like, the more technical paperwork. I got to do the stuff that's looks pretty in front end, like the website and stuff. And
mm-hmm. You made a logo. It was pretty cool.
I did the logo, yeah. And made up some of the Oskaloose core mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Made up a mythological creature.
Yes.
But I don't know. Our time was really variable because we'd get real bit, like, this was kind of like our side gig that we kept pushing back to because people disappeared that originally were really involved.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to say that I had worked 71 hours on
That seems fair.
You're closest without going over.
Yeah. It's just, it's right rules.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
So let me think. I know there are a bunch of questions that we listed out and we've kind of talked about some of them. We can probably just continue the conversation organically, I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the things we should talk about is, like, because this will get to the whole point of what an Oskaloose is. We should mark this in the show notes. We should put a picture of the Oskaloose in the show notes on the website. Yeah, for sure. The reason we had to create a mythological creature goes right back to the reason we decided to do something that had both hackathon elements and jam elements.
Mm.
So what we talked about it and we were trying to think about whether we should do one or the other. And we eventually decided on both because we wanted, like, the instructional design process is very much rooted in, like, needs analysis. You look at your organization that wants you to do some work. And you look at the, like, the learning audience and who you're going to be delivering this learning experience to and what you want the outcomes to be and so on and so forth. And so you're really solving a problem. Like, that organization has a need for something because they want something to be different than the way it is now.
Yeah.
And as an instructional designer, you need to try to understand what that is and then try to design an experience that people can go through that will help move the needle on what the organization needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be anything from a nonprofit or, like, a business or government agency or whatever, you know, like, any group of people. But the point being is that instructional design starts with, like, organizational goals. That's not what a game jam is usually, right? Like, a game jam, it gives you more of a loose framework. Like, it gives you some things to get inspired by, but the way you could take it in a lot of different directions, which is why, like, global game jam, you'll get, like, a prompt, you'll get, like, a theme, like, what was it the other day? Like, transmission was one of the recent.
That was one of them, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One of the themes from the last few years. And if you want to make, like, if you want to make a platformer about transmission, you can. If you want to make, like, a puzzler, you know, there's all, you can do whatever you want.
Right.
You just connect it to the theme in its own way.
Yeah.
So that's a really cool experience, and we wanted people to be able to have that freedom to just be creative because most instructional designers in their day jobs are constrained.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily able to do the creative work that they find most captivating. They're able to bring, like, their creative skills to bear, but, like, it's not art, right? It's a design process.
Sure.
And on the other hand, we also wanted to give people the chance to practice the instructional design process. So that's kind of where we ended up with the hackathon, right? Because a hackathon, you have a specific problem that you're trying to solve.
Yeah, because we looked at it and we're like, we could do it more jam-like and be like, here's a theme, but people would need to be their own subject matter expert on things. And if we came up with something like the Oskaloose, they could do more of like, here's our learning objectives. Here's our more specific goals for the end of this event, as well as we don't have to be like, go along now. Run along. Make something about sustainability. Make it cool. for an undefined audience. But if we made up our own thing, then we could be like, here's your audience, here's your target demographic, here's kind of the problems and the goals. And we could be like the end all subject matter experts if we make up our own creature.
I see.
Because, you know, no one's going to come around and be like, that's not quite right.
Oh, actually, well, the, yeah.
actually, I wrote the book on the Oskaloos.
Yeah. So. Got it. That's a really creative way, you know, a creative solution to that is to create a, you know, a creature that you, that is the audience for this thing. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah. Well, we wanted, so our theme was sustainability. That's what we decided on as far as the theme. And then running parallel to that was our prompt.
Yeah.
So we said, like, kind of the language that we used on the website, and we'll link the website in the show notes so you can, like, go poke around and oob and ah at Mark's cool, like, Starburst logo thing. but we talked about how you could jam the theme or you could hack the prompt. Mm-hmm. And if you chose the theme and it's more like a, we said, if you want to do something that's more like a jam, a game jam, do the theme. Then you just get the theme of sustainability and you run with it. If you want to do something that's more like a hackathon, then you're going to deal with the prompt, which has like this very specific criteria for what you need to build. Mm. And I think most of the, we didn't have a ton of participants. Our initial goal was like, let's get 40 people. we didn't have that many, but we did have a lot of enthusiastic folks show up. And I feel like most people were doing the prompt.
Yeah, I think only one person did the theme. And then you and I did like little projects because we had a little bit of a head start on everybody. Just a little.
But we didn't want to get ourselves too in deep with anything because A, we were tired, and B, we needed to be available in case people had questions.
Right.
So.
Yeah. But I think you did the theme, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So. But only like one actual participant did the theme. Everyone did the prompt because we made a cute little creature and people are like excited about the cute little creature with the silly name.
I think you got to tell us what an Oskaloos is, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that?
All right. So an Oskaloos is a short monotreme. So monotremes are things like echidnas or the platypus.
Oh,
so
okay.
It lays eggs, but it's still a mammal. Mm-hmm. You know, it is the fun creatures when you look at it and you're like, this doesn't actually exist. No, it's a real thing. And so we decided to make up the Oskaloos, which was this sort of scavenger monotreme of the Midwest that is kind of like a cross between like a kiwi, a chicken, and a raccoon, like something in there.
Okay.
So it looks kind of bird-like, like a kiwi. And it was a scavenger and it's purple, but like a deep purple because Ellen and her family has this whole background in like zoology. And I kept coming up with these things and they'd be like, more than once Ellen was like, that sounds a little too silly.
I had to push back on some actually moments when I was getting feedback from my family. They're like, I don't know if the monotreme would walk like that. It doesn't really make sense for its skeleton. I'm like, nope. Okay. Noted. Moving on.
But yeah, and then we made up this whole lore about it, like being in the pioneer days, being good luck because it was there was less disease when the Oskaloos was around, but really it was because it was scavenging like rotting food and stuff. And then it's this recently rediscovered species that's of course recently discovered. It's endangered. And so people would have to try to figure out a way to like raise Oskaloos awareness or, you know, help out. We made up an organization too, the Wild Oskaloos Wildlife Foundation or something like that.
Wonderful. Wonderful Oskaloos.
Wonderful Oskaloos Wildlife Foundation. Yeah. Wow.
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 So we made up Wow. And so you would be working for Wow to help protect and spread the word about the Oskaloos because, and we came up with like, we had like a million things when we were first dreaming it up, of basically making it have to do with sustainability. So Oskaloos is a scavenger. It would get into the trash. It would eat bright, shiny, colorful plastic and choke. And so you would be trying to get people to separate out the recyclables and take better care of what they put in the trash and mm-hmm. compost, like that. So we tied it into sort of like real world issues too at the same time.
Yeah, since we invented the Askaloos, we were able to invent the threats to the Askaloos.
Yeah.
To keep it within the theme. So, like, yeah, like it was, it had an endangered nesting, or like it had limited nesting sites because it really like needs to have these specific places where it lays its monotreme eggs, and it likes to dig in trashes. So you might want to explore having an Askaloos-proof waste receptacle in your alley, and so on and so forth. But yeah, that was all trying to tie back into the theme of sustainability around like being mindful about what you do with the things you, the off, you know, like the extra stuff that happens when you make a, when you consume a thing, mm-hmm. when you make a consume, and just thinking about what you do with that and where it ends up. So people did some really cool stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are there examples somewhere that we can like?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll post these links to the show notes as well, but, to kind of back up, so yeah, so we ended up hosting it on Itch, mm-hmm. which was not our first choice, because Itch is, you know, very well established as a game jam hosting platform, and right. we weren't really like, we wanted to leverage the feeling of a game jam, but we weren't really positioning ourselves as a game jam.
Sure.
We initially looked at DevPost, which is a place to host hackathons.
Huh.
And Mark, you initially talked, like applied to get an account started there, and they didn't like what we had to offer or something.
We talked to the DevPost guy, and I had a contact at DevPost that like went back and forth, had me like explain everything. And in the first email, I was like, yeah, this is kind of this deal where we're doing instructional design, and people are going to submit different types of projects, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And then he asked for all these details about the Askaloos and the event and all these things.
Oh.
And then finally ended it with an email where he's like, oh, by the way, we don't do things that aren't programming related.
Wow.
Because we want to stay on brand. I was just like, you had us go back and forth with like six emails. Like, you knew this from the first one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a little silly, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. And I was kind of worried about that. I mean, even with Itch, but Itch is very versatile with what they are willing to host.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was nervous about that at first because I was like, are they going to pull it like the day of and be like, yeah, you can't host this anymore?
Yeah.
I was very worried about
that. Well, it's actually kind of something that happened recently is that the Itch people were saying, you know, we're really just a file sharing service. So what if we had a media player? Like, and so oh. they just, I'm like, yeah, which is so if you can, oh, you can just upload so people can sell their albums.
Oh, really?
On Itch now.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
Because they just realized, yeah, all we do is host files and time to accounts and payment processors. Why not also become a SoundCloud? Like, they realized they had all the tools.
Yeah. Fair.
So, yeah, their philosophy is very much like, you want to host something with us and sell it? We don't care what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly, like, I think their most robust and refined features have to do with finding games,
yeah,
and finding game jams. But sure, you can, you know, you look for the right tags on anything, you can probably find it. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can look on there for Askaloos, and you'll probably find some stuff.
So, what was the final format that you expected people to upload to Itch? PDFs, links? What were people actually? What was the final project format?
Well, yeah. So we wanted to make it really open to whatever people had to give. Like, instructional design can, the output of instructional design can take so many forms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think something that gets the most attention is e-learning, because I think it takes the most work. It certainly takes a really like varied amount of skill sets, but what we told people they could submit would be like a poster or like an app mock-up or instructor-led training or like a classroom activity or an outside scavenger hunt or something like that, or like an exhibit. I could literally could take any format, as long as they kind of showed their work.
Yeah.
So we did ask people to, when they uploaded their solution, also upload a description of like certain things about their solution. How did they, you know, what audience did they target? What were the specific outcomes they were trying to achieve with their solution and challenges and so on and so forth. So that's the output the final like media file could be almost anything.
Yeah.
But the important part, I think, that made it an instructional design event was the description of how you got there.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Mark, yeah, did you want to add anything?
Just that we left it really open. We got a lot of different types of submissions. I think everyone submitted at least one thing that was different of all our participants. Like we got a game, we got an actual like e-learning module, we got posters, we got a video. But yeah, we left it nice and broad and open because depending on the situation, what your solution is, what you decide to focus on is like hacking the prompt, kind of dictated what your output would be and kind of your time too. So some people didn't have like really the full 72 hours to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put in what they could to put something together. Mm-hmm. But as long as they had like their learning objectives and their target audience and stuff and other little things like that listed, all those little instructional design questions that you're supposed to ask and answer that I'm sure everyone does with every project they do very thoroughly,
yeah,
written out as we ask them to. we pretty much accepted anything to let them be creative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it seems like the process of developing this kind of, it wasn't that you had this core idea and then made changes to refine it. It's that you had this like amorphous concept that got refined as it got closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
So what about that process of like picking a date, telling people about it, that whole like execution on that, independent of the design of the event itself? What was that like?
Long. You want to go first?
No, I agree with you. Log. Elaborate.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the first time either one of us has really done anything like this, I think, in this way, trying to put this together and get people to participate. And yeah, it was, I think once it took us a while to land on the fact that we needed both the prompt and the theme. And then we kind of struggled with the prompt for a little bit and tried to figure that out. And then when we had the prompt, then we had to like create the assets to support the prompt, right? We needed source material for people to work with, and
yeah. We
invented the critter. So we needed to create the source material,
right,
which was a lot of fun, but also like took a lot of time.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So yeah, that was long. And then there was this whole like promotional period. Like once we got the creative parts kind of locked in, we knew what we wanted to do with the Oskaloosa and we had like a discrete backlog of things that we wanted to create for it. We started working on promotion, and I think that's where we kind of ran out of gas. Partly because we'd been working on it for so long, but also because I think maybe neither one of us really likes doing that stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah. You know, having to go out and talk to strangers that are the worst.
No offense. That's a pretty common game dev refrain.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to make my thing, but now I have to sell it to people. Now I have to convince them to participate or to join up or to make a sale, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like that's a part where like, even if you plan for it, it isn't something any of us want to be doing necessarily. I mean, you're lucky if you're the type of person who enjoys that work also.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're lucky if you're the type of person who can do that work, but you have to be able to know how to do it and enjoy it for it to be not super stressful, because you're doing it at a time when you're burnt out on the project.
Yeah.
Almost
always.
That's a really good point. Like you have to expect that you're going to feel burnt out on it.
Yeah.
And so if it's not something you're automatically passionate about, if you're already burnt down, then you're not going to be able to dig deep and find that enthusiasm for something that you don't just genuinely like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of the people that we like, where we would market it to, who we would market to, like that community already knew we had been working on it pretty heavily. And then there's a bunch of like tangential communities that might be interested, like on Reddit, the teachers subreddit for regular teachers, but also like early childhood education. But a lot of those would have these like no self-promotional clauses. And
Yeah.
Like, we would have had to, for me to build up the relationships, because I was in charge of a lot of that part I was supposed to be. But to build up the relationships with all of those individual communities that I'm not exactly a part of. I don't work in early childhood education, mm-hmm. in higher ed. And then convince them, by the way, let me post my event to your page. Even though I don't necessarily contribute that much else, was kind of tricky because they'd have non-promotional like rules in their subreddits or their communities,
right.
Their Discord servers.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is fair. Like, I understand why.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be something we'd be spamming for like months upon months upon months, but it still fits within the clauses, I guess.
Did you feel that the audience in general was kind of niche for this like event?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. I don't know. That's a good one. That's probably one of the things we should definitely revisit before we decide what we want to do next. And that was one of the things we wanted to talk about on this episode was what do we want to do with it next? Is it too niche? I just feel like it isn't. It's just that people don't know what it is.
Sure.
Yeah. So the problem wasn't like, if you got someone to understand what it was, you found a receptive audience more or less, but it was just getting to that point.
I think so. I mean, the people who participated loved it. We got really positive feedback. Every one of them said that they would absolutely do it again.
That's great.
Or at least everyone who submitted responses to the feedback form. Forms are important, people. Yeah. Anyway, they all said that they would absolutely 100% do it again. And everyone seemed to have a really fun time, whether they were like really active in the Discord channel or whether they were kind of more just building their thing solo. They all seemed to really enjoy it. But I don't think that, I mean, like it happened with DevPost, right? Like they're dev focused. That's what hackathons are. They're for developers or for people who program. Yeah. And that's just what you think of. And you think of jams and you think of jazz or you think of games. And there just isn't, I think a lot of people don't know what a game jam is. A lot of people don't know what a hackathon is unless they're directly or tangentially related to those fields that take the most, you know, that make most use of those kinds of events. And so I think it's a really unfamiliar format and there therefore needs to be like really spelled out what you're supposed to get from it.
Yeah.
And it's possible that having the prompt and the theme confused that a little bit. I don't know. What do you think?
I think maybe it did. I think one of the hurdles, and I saw this like when I was looking up how to promote your thing and when we were first doing our stuff, was a few different like jamathon that I found. but hackathon, because we decided we're gonna make up our own thing. but the hackathon like guides that I found of putting together your hackathon, I found a couple where they talk about the big problem of people, not necessarily that the event wasn't accessible to everybody, like anyone could have taken part in our event. We made the output very like technically basic. You could have submitted a Word document with like a strategy or a syllabus, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people looking at it and being like, am I allowed to come play too? Mm-hmm. No, can I participate? And I mean, I even got a couple of those questions from a few people that were like, I'm just kind of interested in instructional design. I'm kind of testing the waters. Can I come by and do stuff? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there were lots of people that were like hesitant because they didn't feel like they belonged.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's fascinating because like I hear that kind of things from game jams too. Like I think a lot of people are interested in participating in a game jam, but they don't consider themselves programmers or they don't consider themselves artists. And so they don't know how they can actively participate in the game jam. They don't know what they could provide. When I was in, you know, when I helped like organize some game jams and things, I put in work to like convince people that you can participate regardless of your skill level in programming or art or what have you, because there's so many different things that go into making a game.
It's unknown how people will like approach a thing that they are unfamiliar with.
Right.
So, and you'll be very surprised as you organize a game jam. People will be like, oh, that's just for people who are professional game developers with like years of experience. You're like, that's not who does game jams generally. But like, they don't know that. Right. And how, why would they?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, there's like a culture around these sorts of things that sometimes you can feel left out of, even if it's like the jam has, you know, is a new jam by new people, who, you know, who themselves have never done it before.
Yeah.
Like, I totally see why someone could come in and say, like, you know, I know that this is for professionals or whatever, but I would like to see. But I imagine that must have been kind of shocking to hear because those were the people you were targeting, right? Like, in a lot of ways.
I'm not sure if anything was shocking.
Yeah. Like, I think I was kind of, I think I've frustrated Ellen more than once because I'd get stickler about like, yeah, but who's our audience? What does it mean? Like, I kept trying to like reiterate these points and then get really into the nuance of if we're going over these people after these people. So we talked about that a lot until we kind of settled eventually on the idea of it's for people that want to network and get to know people in their field, and it's for people to get a chance to just be creative. Mm-hmm. I feel like we probably could have marketed harder to that.
Yeah.
To those two aspects, like specifically. Mm-hmm. I mean, we definitely like had that in what we posted when we posted to social media and stuff. But I feel like we could have pushed harder on how it benefits those people and how it's was a really accessible event for anybody. I feel like we could have pushed that a lot harder.
Sure.
Yeah, I think one thing that we could have done differently, and if we do this again, is maybe provide more examples of how people can collaborate, because that didn't really happen organically, and I was kind of surprised in the moment, I guess, but now, like, in hindsight, it kind of seems obvious why I wouldn't. The first hackathon or the first game jams that I participated in were on site, and that kind of forces you to talk to people because there are only so many outlets you can plug into.
Right.
And other various things that happen when you're on site. Everybody was virtual for our event. And so I think we needed to do more to facilitate some camaraderie. Yeah. And then we got some good suggestions in the feedback forums about how to do that next time. But I think that if we had also provided some examples of like, hey, one way you can help contribute, even if you don't want to make your own project, is like you can make assets. We could have had somebody just drawing different Oskalooses the entire weekend, and that would have been cool.
Yeah. We've got a nice Games Club t-shirt.
We do.
We do.
Wait, I have one.
You do have one. Mark has one as well.
I have one too. So everyone here has one.
Yep, definitely. And we don't have to worry about not having one. I don't have one yet, y'all. Okay, so I'm going to go on the website.
So this is really a message for you.
Yeah, it's a message for me, but also, you know, listeners, you should.
Here, what we're going to do is Steven is going to buy one right now.
Oh, my goodness.
On air.
Okay, yeah, you go to nicegames.club/shirt.
Yep.
And then see, let's see what it takes you. Huh?
Yeah, when you plug it in, what do you see?
It's loading. Hey, Amazon. Hey. Oh my gosh, look at this t-shirt. I've seen the t-shirt before. Just because I don't own one doesn't mean I haven't seen it.
Right, because
it's only $20. So cheap.
How soft is it, though? Does it tell you?
Well, Steven would know.
I don't have
But one. I know for a fact it's incredibly soft.
Yeah.
It's
incredibly soft.
Super comfy. Gosh.
Wow. Okay, I got to get one. I'm going to get one for my mom, too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Double win.
My mom said she wanted one. So I'm going to get one for her.
It's got the Nice Games Club logo on the front.
It does.
With the three colored dots representing the three of us.
Yeah.
And it's got the website on the back. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's classy.
Yeah, it's very classy.
Classy gray.
It's a nice classy. It's a nice classy like, t-shirt.
Like, totally, you can dress it up. You can dress it down.
Yeah.
You could wear it with a skirt. You could wear it with pants. Probably wear it with shorts if you wanted to.
I mean, you know, that's a stretch, but I bet it's possible.
Go wild.
Shorts. You know what they say about shorts.
No.
They're comfortable and easy to wear. Just like this shirt.
Hey! Go to nicegames.club/shirt. I'm ordering mine right now.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That's a problem that's a problem that for virtual game jams have had since time immemorial.
Yeah, yeah.
And as more of them are online since the pandemic started, there existed online ones before that. But I think that's been a tough transition for a lot of planners. So it's not a unique problem that you faced, I don't think.
That makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. And then, like, what's the format for team building is, like, an unsolved question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of guides out there, which is like, this is the way we've done it, and it's worked really well, and so try it and adapt it to your... There's no North Star for that topic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also really tough when you are allowing for a lot of different formats in your solution, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you don't necessarily need a full team to make a syllabus, you know? Like, and a lot of the e-learning tools that are used by instructional designers are made for people who are one person shows. They do kind of everything. And so if you're kind of just working from the basics, there's not a lot of incentive to team up, but the quality of what you could put out would be a lot greater if you did team up. I think that instructional designers, especially new ones, they don't necessarily think that way, which that is something that was really revealing to me. It's like nobody even asked. Nobody asked each other for like feedback really. Nobody really asked each other for help on making assets. There wasn't much like organic collaboration I really expected there to be.
I saw maybe one or two people post like halfway through their works in progress, and I even did that a couple of times just to try to get people to like jump in, but it was very much, you know, middle school dance, and all the boys and girls are looking at them and they're like, so are we supposed to, how do I ask someone to be my partner and go out to the dance floor with me? Like,
yeah,
people, I think people were really shy, and I think there were enough, again, that sort of like skill gap, do I really belong, imposter syndrome that lots of people have, kind of playing into, do I want to offer to be on like Ellen's team and then make a complete fool out of myself because I don't know how to write a learning objective,
mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. But looking at the comments that people left, something I was thinking about that in the future would make a really good, almost like a mixer, like a way to get people more involved would, and this changes the event a little bit, but throughout, holding little workshops.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
Like, we've got our 72 hours. All right, Saturday at 11, we're going to do an hour or a half hour where we're literally going to, for the first half hour, talk about here's how you write out needs analysis. Here's how you can go about this. And then spending a half hour just kind of being present with the participants so that they can work with each other on it and submit stuff.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah, I think that provides a draw too without us adding, like, we didn't have a whole lot of like extra incentives other than the fun of the event. Mm-hmm. But I think that would add a draw without having to add like a monetary incentive or a sponsorship where, you know, we're giving them like a year of articulate storyline or something like that.
Yeah.
Where the experience, the real reward is the things we found along the way.
The friends we made along the 72 hours.
The Oskaloose friends we made along the way.
The friends we made with the Oskaloose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Oh, and we could do like, I mean, we could do tags like, I am really good at storyline. I'm really good at making art. I'm really good at writing. I'm really good at programming, because you could totally like make a game based learning experience, make a game, put it up on itch. Like, people could have done that. I think you'd need the full time that we allotted for the event to do something like that, and you'd need to collaborate with people. But yeah, there would be no reason that couldn't have been a thing.
Yeah. And I wonder if our event wasn't too short.
Hmm.
especially because there was a number of people that came to me that were like just telling me how busy their week was. And because, and I know this is true for a lot of professions, but like instructional, there's lots of instructional designers that are freelance or are otherwise, you know, when it gets busy, when it rains, it pours. Mm-hmm. And so they'd be like, oh, I'm just like, they'd be pumped for it and be talking to me about it for weeks. And there was one guy that talked to me about a bunch. Oh my God, that sounds so cool. And then a week before he's like, oh, I'm so busy. There's so much to do because, you know, it just happened to be that time of the year for him.
Yeah.
And I think that that scared a couple of people off. Like we had some people be like, I don't think I have enough time to really put anything together, but can I just sit in the corner and watch and participate? I like, and I think that was something that kept some people from signing up and like making, feeling like they made a commitment.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. You certainly could, you know, invite folks to observe knowing that they'll eventually want to contribute just by being around,
mm-hmm.
you know, like join a team as an observer, go ahead, you wink, you know, but you know, I think other jams have approached that length question differently. Like, you know, sometimes you just do it all in a weekend and you cram for it and you're tired on Monday. But other times it takes place over 3 weeks and you are not expected to spend more than 2 working days on it across those weeks.
Yeah.
Right. Or it takes place over a certain amount of time and you pick out your 3 days where you're going to like really crunch on it in that sort of jam setting. And that makes it a little bit more flexible. It makes it a little bit harder to organize because there isn't a single truth that everybody lives by, but that's a way around it, mm-hmm. you know?
I like longer. I think that's a really good point. I like helping, a couple of people mentioned in the feedback forum that it would be good to like open up the Discord server before the event started, because we held back the prompt and the theme. Yeah. We did it kind of like Global Game Jam style, sure. where we didn't reveal it until the day that it started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we inadvertently took the extra step in that we didn't add people to the Discord channel until a couple, the day before that.
Oh, right,
and so
right.
maybe we should have done that like weeks, yeah. like as soon as people registered, perhaps, to kind of let those relationships build up and hype and stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, there's the spirit of the jam, which is just like hold back until you're ready to go. But yeah, some of that like non-work prep of just learning how to communicate in this setting and yeah, making some relationships and tossing out ideas that, you know, are not solid. That's not cheating.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I expected a lot more people that were like, because we did a channel within the established like instructional designer server. And I expected a lot more of the people that are kind of lurkers, but show up for the events mm-hmm. to show up for this event. And we just didn't get quite as many of those people as I expected. But yeah, I think opening the channel up earlier on would have definitely made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we got, more than one comment, I think, that said that.
Yeah.
That asked for it to be open earlier.
Yep. Yeah, and we could let people slide in. I mean, it seems like super basic now, but just we weren't thinking about that at the time.
You had a lot on your plate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of our last uncrossed off items that we want to talk about was like, what did we learn on this project that I didn't know before? And I feel like I did know this before, but I have to relearn it every time I try something new because it's a new context. And that is, I can't think of everything. Like, there's no way to think of everything.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of the reason why we just kind of like went for it. You know, we initially thought we're going to have tons of participants and we're going to promote it like 6 months in advance. And I met with Beth Korth to talk about how she gets, you know, events together for IGDATC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh my gosh. And she gave me all these tips, and I wrote them down, and we didn't follow many of them because we just ran out of time.
Sorry, Beth.
No, thanks, Beth. Organizing events is hard. but yeah, I can't think of anything. Can't think of everything. So like the best teacher is really experienced, because now I know like what did take time and what didn't take time, and some things will be a lot faster next time, and some things will, and since some things will be faster, we'll be able to use that extra time to do some of the things that we didn't do this time around that will be really impactful, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we spent, I think the big difference about doing it a second time around is the amount of work and effort that we can put into, frankly, the stuff that is more fun, at least for me, to even put together, like the little fake podcast and the other promotional materials. And, you know, I would have loved to, like, when we did the reveal, do a big reveal. Like, we had all these cool ideas, but what really got us bogged down for a good chunk of time was, like, going through DevPost and then having to go through itch.io, getting the website set up and setting all of that up just right, making all the stuff for LX Jamathon, including, you know, making it like a proper LLC and stuff, so that we didn't have to worry about getting the pantsuit off us because someone got upset that their Osclus thing was public or whatever might happen. But like all that extra behind the scenes work that kind of, it's the foundation, and once it's done, we don't have to worry about it as much as anymore. And that ate up a lot of energy and headspace. Like, we had more than one meeting where we just talked about like the rules of the Jamathon, which then we made it so broad that no one broke any rules. People are also like reasonable, normal people, and we had things in there about, like, we had a couple of specific, I don't even remember what, but we had a couple of specific things in there. And I think at one point, Ellen, you were just like, let's just put don't be a jerk and leave it at that.
We got a little more specific. Yeah, well, I think we also were able to lean on itch.io's participation rules. And I think we said something like, don't, you know, like, we listed, well, you know, like, we're going to share the links to the, we made a participant guide, and we will have, that link is available on our website, so you'll be able to get to it and see the exact language that we used. But I think it was something like, here are the things you can't do, and if you are breaking these, we will kick you out. And also, don't break any laws in your area. We're not responsible for that.
So a ton of lessons learned for next time. I keep hearing next time, next time, next time. Is this now an annual event? When is next time?
I was making a face. Would you do this again?
Yeah.
I think so too. I'd
absolutely do it again.
I would do it again.
I like how each of you were like staring at each other, like, not willing to commit until the other one did.
We're so busy right now, and we're both so tired.
We don't have to do it now.
No, we're for sure not now.
Next week, let's go.
No, please.
Well, the first one took a year to from conception to execution. The second one probably will be closer to that 6 weeks you originally planned.
Oh, God, no. It'll take longer than that.
You think so?
Well, yeah. I mean, because, like, I think one of the things we really liked doing was creating that prompt. I would really like to do that kind of thing again because, A, it made it fun for us, and, B, it allowed us to be creative and then not feel like we needed to bring our creativity to producing something the event. We could be there to help participants. And I still think that, to me, that feels like the right role for us during the event is to help participants.
I think we'd end up spending more time on like the workshop thing, like the mechanics of how is this a good event for people, how is this going to be enjoyable for them, rather than just being like, all right, something exists, there aren't any holes in the boat, it's not going to like immediately sink once we launch it, but adding, you know, more of the flourishes and stuff. So I'd want to spend the time to like really flesh that out on the prompt, but if we had the will, I think we have enough of that base groundwork that it wouldn't take nearly as long to put together another one.
Yeah,
but I'd want to, just to get like that extra level of polish on there.
Yeah it's really fun to do that, and then that would leave us maybe some more time to A, do the promotional stuff, and B, get like, if we wanted to do workshops, we wouldn't have to all necessarily do that on our own. We could bring in some of our, you know, some people that we know to do an hour-long workshop on something, right? I think that'd be kind of fun, especially if we had it over a longer period of time. Like if we stretched it out over a month, then that would be pretty cool. So I think we're talking about it as if we're going to do another one. So I guess we're going to do another one, but we're going to give ourselves a break first.
Yeah, that seems fair.
What about, do you want to go after sponsors next time?
I think we should. I had more than one person that was like talking to me about their experience putting together events or working with people that were like, oh yeah, no, get these sponsors, they'll love it, they'll eat it up, because it's a chance to get them to, you know, use, have new IDs, new instructional designers and stuff use their tools.
Yeah.
So like, it's free marketing for them, and it costs, you know, Articulate, it costs them nothing to give a year of storyline, a digital access to a digital piece of software to some random winner of a event, of which
I don't know,
other than like conferences, they don't, I never found anything that was really quite like what we did.
We didn't have a judging, I don't really think we're gonna put judging in there though, like for the winner. We could do like, you'll, if you submit a thing, you'll be randomly like selected. Yeah. But we didn't have like a judging, and I don't know. That is one thing we talked about a lot. It's like maybe having like some options for giving feedback. I don't know if I want to do that. I don't want to organize it. I don't want to organize it after the fact. But we can.
Yeah. Well, the hardest thing was everything was so open.
Yeah.
You know, like we judge you. You're number one, for reasons. When you submitted like the syllabus, and then someone else put together a giant video and a small course module.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Judging criteria, and how do you make it like even without having to make it so that everyone has the same skill set or access to software even.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I appreciate about game jams versus what I used to do when I was making films, which is like a 24-hour film fest, very similar idea, is those always have judging and awards. And that's a big motivation for people, and it's just miserable.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not fun, and you know, you're not doing your best work because you're in artificial situations. You're leaning too much on the skills you already have because they're tried and true, rather than the skills you're trying to develop.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
And you're pressured into impressing people, and you're motivated by what other people are doing. All just bad motivations all around.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
you want everyone to be a winner. You know.
Well, yeah, and not like the. Yeah, we want everyone to be a winner because we want everyone to be choosing their own goals for the event.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, and I, you know, it's stereotypical to associate millennials with participation trophies, but that's not what this is about. Everyone comes to the event with different experiences and therefore different goals for what they want out of it.
Yeah.
And having some kind of judging criteria and then prizes based on that just doesn't seem... It's not aligned with what we want to do.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Mark was saying, it changes your motivations.
Exactly. No, I think there's a possibility for feedback, and we can explore that again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. I do think I want to do it again, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've made the commitment for the both of us now. You've said it on a podcast.
I said I think I want to do it again.
We can edit this stuff out. We don't have to. Just kidding. I'm editing this one probably. I don't know. It's all going on there.
He'll take it out maybe. I have one question for the all of us, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, so based on this conversation, this is kind of game dev tangential, a way that a lot of like the learning experience design stuff that I talk about is. What specific takeaways do you think come from this conversation for game developers who want to participate in a jam or organize their own?
I think the thing I'm picking up on is that your event is unique to your audience, but not because your audience is unique.
Yeah.
I think it's because of what you guys built, right? There are 30 or 40 other ways to do something like this for learning experience designers. And you picked your way, not because you need, it didn't seem like you were defining like, what would a jam look like? Maybe that's the question you started with, is what would a thing like this look like for this audience?
Mm-hmm.
But it became what it was because the two of you made it, I think.
Hmm.
So I think so my takeaway, if I'm someone who wants to make a jam in my particular, you know, corner of development that I feel like I can organize something around, is, you know, your audience is important, but that's not necessarily what makes it unique.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, you don't have to worry about the right way to do it, I guess, is just find your way of doing it. I mean, that's kind of similar to what you tell people when they participate in a jam. You know, like you certainly could do a thing where there is where you have like feedback rounds or something. There are other ways to do it. And I don't think there's a right way to do it.
Yeah.
But the two of you did some innovation because it doesn't seem to be something that existed for this audience. But I would almost say that if something like this were like an annual event and became popular, what you can hope for is other groups organizing similar events that have their own flavors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And turning, you know, and maybe not having the burden of doing this for the whole industry. But maybe that's what you start with, is to inspire others to do something in their own way, you know. Yeah. It should also give you the freedom to make really strong choices, have opinions about how you want to run it, that you don't have to feel are governed by analysis and data. It's because it's what you want, you know. I'm not sure if that's the lesson that either of you are taking away, but that's kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about the Jamathon event as like a designed experience that expresses like us in any way, but I guess it is.
Well, you were too busy making it.
Yeah.
the Oskaloosa is my spirit animal. I feel completely blinded by this event.
It is a critter that we invented. Writing that Wikipedia article for it was so much fun.
Oh my gosh, that's a Wikipedia article.
Yeah,
that's...
we wrote it. Yeah, we did.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that alone is really unique. I mean, yeah. Like you can certainly do a thing based on a theme, and most game jams and most things, even ones that are a little more structured, they the actual amount of work put into the prompt is a lot lower than what the two of you did.
Yeah,
for real.
And I think that you both identified that as a core component of this as a project.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that it's a necessary thing for an event like this, but it is definitely, I believe you, it's a core component for this particular event.
Yeah.
And so, you know, hang on to that and keep building.
Mm-hmm. I know. What weird critter will we come up with next?
Something glorious and genius, but obviously we can't reveal it right this moment.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly what it is. Sorry, back up here.
Okay. You can't give us an exclusive review right now on the podcast.
Oh, looks, we're running out of tape. We only have a couple seconds left, so say it quick.
It'll still be furry.
Okay.
That's a promise.
Yeah. I went through like so many different animal characteristics, like does it have lots of legs? And I immediately said nope. That's our show. For show notes and links from today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. You can visit us on Twitter at nicegamesclub, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and Star Trek, The Next Generation, the animated series. Too many colons in that title. We like hearing from you, so tweet back. Or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we're not quite sure what we're doing yet, but get hype all the same, please. Anyway, that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.